All statements, views, and opinions are personal and do not represent the government, DOD, or the United States Army. Welcome to the Center for Army Lessons Learned podcast, Insights from the Fight, the podcast dedicated to bringing you lessons learned from exercises, warfighters, and Army fielded forces. I'm your host, Mr. Jeremy Sturmer. Today, we're discussing lessons learned by Battalion XO's S3. We'll discuss how some field grade officers approach their duties and direct activities to achieve success with their units. Joining us today are three leaders who are KD complete and have over 16 years of experience working at various staff positions throughout the Army, including all having served as XO's and S3's on battalion staff. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. I'd like to give you a minute to introduce yourself to our audience as we prepare to talk about some of our lessons learned.
Hi, my name is Ron Rice. I'm an armor officer, have about 6 years of experience across multiple battalion staffs and some brigade time. Served as an AS3, had about 18 months in that job before I took a company command, which was my second company command. Served as a battalion S3 and a battalion XO that included two NTC rotations as well as a deployment to Europe with the regionally aligned force over there, focused on training Ukrainian forces as well as some other aspects of what was going on in the continent at that time.
Thank you, Ron. Charlie?
Good morning. Name's Charlie Foy. I have about 6 years of experience across staffs from the battalion all the way to the division level. Been a battalion S4, worked in the S3 as the actual S3 and a battalion XO, as well as a G35 planner. Deployed in support of Poland. We're focused on our partners and allies over there. I'm an infantry officer by trade.
Major Joe Perez. I'm an armor officer by trade. Spent time on S3 staffs at the squadron, battalion, and brigade levels, sometime as a division battle captain, the CHOP cell, and then my KD time as a battalion XO and S3. During that time, we deployed to NTC as well as to Europe in support of the RAF rotation and Operation Trident Ready.
Awesome. Let's dive into some of the challenges that you encountered as either a battalion XO. When you gentlemen first arrived on battalion staff, how did you assess the personnel and systems and determine where you were going to apply your time?
Yeah, so I'll jump on that one. I had an interesting experience when I came down to be an S3. I had luckily been assigned to the brigade staff uniquely because the brigade was in Korea for approximately 10 months. And then I stayed on the ready reserve as a part of a division tasking. So I was familiar with the organization and the battalion before I got there. I also changed with a guy who was moving up to become the brigade S3. So I showed up and my rip with him was about 15 minutes before he was like, hey, I'm going to Fort Hood like this afternoon. Here's the battalion. Here are the people that you have. Good luck. I knew some of the individuals that I was kind of going to be working with, but at the same time, I didn't get any kind of transition period. So I very quickly had to sit down, write everybody's name on a whiteboard, figure out what their branches are and their specialties and their backgrounds, then immediately kind of had to start making assessments on, hey, I can lean on this guy. I know this guy from the time I was here on ready reserve and I've worked with him before. And I got very lucky that I had a very talented team of people that I inherited from a leader who did a good job training his staff. We also had a weird transition because this was also the time of the COVID vaccines. So the battalion was split between Miami and Dallas, running two different operations. So I also didn't meet my battalion commander for like the first 60 days of my S3 time. It was really me and another major who was phenomenal as the soon to be outgoing XO, running a battalion with him kind of knowing the systems and processes and kind of mentoring me. Like it usually happens when you transition into the S3 and you have an experienced XO. At the same time, it was like, hey, I don't have a boss who's readily available and or present. And now I have a staff that's about to go into a summer transition. So a lot of it was just sitting down, whiteboarding it, and then going and sitting down and talking with Aaron and having conversations about, hey, who is a good staff officer in this S3 shop?
As you describe that situation, how did you deal with training that new staff as you were trying to get to know them as you started doing your functions as an operation officer?
The biggest thing that we leaned into was trying to actually train the battalion. Even though the COVID vaccine task force operations were going on and I was missing two of my armor companies, I still had an infantry company. The goal was to take that infantry company and to train them as highly as we could on individual squad level tasks, trying to get them to at least a buddy team live fire level of proficiency before everybody would come home and we'd start a gunnery progression later on in the summer. I used that as an opportunity to take the staff, especially the younger captains in the S3 shops and the lieutenants that I just inherited as they came out of platoon positions into the 3 shop. And I used that as an opportunity to start working through, hey, this is how we build the 8-step training model. This is how you plan training at the battalion level so that the company can be successful. And it worked for me.
Gentlemen, do either of you have a story about assessing the staff when you first showed up?
Also, I'll jump in. When I was moving into position, I got a phone call during PCS leave that said, hey, man, we're going to NTC in 60 days. So we arrived and I jumped into a Staff X simultaneous with crew gunnery and a S3 shop and staff that had just gone through a summer transition period. So we were continually arriving lieutenants at the same time that we're trying to train the staff. We'd lost most of the trained staff officers, or were in the process of losing most of the trained staff officers, either due to position changes, refrads, PCSs. So we really didn't have an opportunity to assess the staff writ large, especially the operations staff at that point. Our training was really much more rote, and we're going to show you how we're going to do this, and then kind of leader-led. I was able to really lean on my assistant S3 at the time, a really strong captain. Fantastic dude. And he really helped pull the three shop through a lot of turmoil, everything that was going on, because considering that the deployment to NTC was a true EJRI. And I think, to my knowledge, the first ABCT EJRI in force comm history. So that was a different experience. I don't know, from the XO perspective, Ron, what did you think about reassessing that staff?
Yeah, obviously we played this game together. That was a challenging and unique time because I had been sitting in the S3 and the XO role. The AS3 you mentioned, you know, had basically been the S3 for the previous 60 days. I knew where he was because I had worked for him. We had soft fired our S4 to go take a company command, but that was really a benefit to us at the battalion level to have him move out. So I got to take some of the people that I had trained as operations officers and redistribute them into the staff and other roles. So it gave us a great opportunity to rebalance where the staff was at. We put a very strong individual into the S4 role, which paid immense dividends for us, as much as he hated that I did that to him. At the same time, we had some major gaps in our swing going into NTC, and one that hurt us and one that I felt like I could have done a much better job handling was our signal shop was atrocious. We had a young first lieutenant that was serving as an RS6. He had no business being in that job. There was no way to replace him. And it was kind of one of those where, looking back now on it, I was worried about other problems with NTC. And when we got into an environment where comms became a critical capability, I wish I had leaned more heavily into that. And that was a lesson learned for me coming out of there, was this is a problem and I'm going to have to devote attention to it. But overall, the rest of the staff going into that rotation, an extremely unique challenge that I don't think any of us were prepared for. I mean, to include our brand new battalion commander, he took command and 4 weeks later was in the box at NTC with the unit that had just been in the box at NTC less than 6 months prior. Lots of unique challenges.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think, you know, the common theme here is we talk about gapping, and I think that's a common flavor for us field grades. You know, when the movement cycle hits and we get brought down to the battalion level, you're usually replacing somebody that's already moved on to the next job. So there's a hole there and you're trying to figure out your organization. Definitely to Ron's point, take a moment, assess where you're at. It's also hard when you become the battalion S3. Your shop is a constant revolving door for everybody kind of leaving and going through the battalion. A lot of times we build systems at that level to handle certain problems, and we do it because of the personnel, personalities, or strengths or weaknesses, and really think about what I tried to build when I came down to the battalion level was a system that was separate from the people and that could be operated with that in mind. And that was like probably the hardest challenge that I did in the first 60 days was because I didn't know who I was going to have because the unit was coming back from deployment. I was sent down to the battalion. They were about 30 days out from coming back from Germany, and then they were going on another 30 days of leave. So I just had the ready reserve people that were going to be there. But I knew, talking to the XO, talking to the battalion commander, that everybody was now about to switch. Hey, I have you guys now, but you're not necessarily going to be here in less than 60 days, and I'm going to have a whole new crop of people. What I need to do is be flexible in my system when I build it, because change is coming. And then two, it's got to keep operating to feed the beast.
As a field grade officer, one of the most important things you can do is you have to show up and you have to put on the face no matter what's going on. Joe can attest to this because obviously we were, you know, in a battalion and we had battle buddy relationship as field grade officers where we would walk outside and it's everything's doom and gloom and the sky is crashing, Russia's on in Ukraine and we're like 300 miles away. And But at the end of the day, like, you've got to wake up and roll out of bed, and you go do PT, and everything hurts. And then you have to walk in front of the staff at whatever your first morning sync is. And they have to look at you and realize, like, hey, this guy's committed. He's all in. And, like, I want to follow that person. I want to work on this organization because the leaders that I work for are dedicated to the mission, the organization, and the people. Maybe you got to hide that deep down inside, because being a field grade officer in KD is a grind. Being an Iron Major is hard. And if I can tell all the young field grade officers and company grade officers who are going to go do this, just remember KD time will end and it's okay. But you also have to put on the face as you grind through it. Like, it is probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my career. Like, and there's a lot of dark humor and jokes that go around in a combat unit, but at the end of the day, you got to wake up and you got to show your people, yeah, things are really hard. I'm going to be there to coach and mentor you so that you can continue to improve in your career. But at the same time, we're all going to get through this together.
We've had a great conversation so far about how you assess and build the staff. I'd like to talk about your relationship with the companies. Charlie, I'm going to get you to start off on this one. Talk about how you build relationship with the company command teams and how you get their inputs to support what you're trying to do as a staff officer.
Yeah, so two ways that I went about doing this. One was I left my office, go down to the company troop area, go even just sit in the company commander's office and just have a dialogue with them. Doesn't always have to be about work. That'll be the bridge and the key to getting them to update. In my mind, a staff has kind of multiple bosses, right? You solve the brigade's problems at the battalion level. You work for your battalion commander so they can lead the formation. But at the same time, you got to ask yourself, what have I done today for those company commands to make their jobs as easy as possible to go out and solve our problems as the battalion, right? So it's kind of one of those things where you have to get them on board so that they take care of the battalion, so that your OER kind of writes itself because, hey, that battalion's so squared away. Go find your captains, your commanders down there, the XOs. Just talk to them and build a personal relationship with them. And you'll get a lot more perspective of what's working well in the battalion and what's not working well. The second thing is when you kind of hit your big milestone training events, whether that's gunnery, platoon live fires, company CalFexes, NTC rotations, things like that. When you're building those plans, a lot of times we have a tendency just to gather the staff together, build the plan, and then back pitch it to the battalion, to the company command teams. And then you pitch it out and they shoot all a bunch of holes. I don't like this. I don't do that. And then, you know, the 6-to-6 conversation happens. Tight as you are with your battalion commander, a 6-to-6 conversation has a lot more weight sometimes than, you know, the two field grades do with the boss. If you can bring them in early and say, hey, here's what I'm thinking, and get those inputs early enough of having the ground truth of what the actual limitations are on the ground, you'll build a better plan to start off with. And then they've already seen it. They've already got input into the planning process. So now when you pitch a product to them, it's more on board with the product and how it's going to flow than they would have been if you had just kind of kept them in the dark and said, here's the Warno, here's your op order brief, what questions do you have? And then, you know, you spend an hour in the conference room where everybody's like, how do you want me to do that, sir? Like, I only have 15 guys or whatever. Those two ways for me, I found great success in that of kind of supporting the companies of, hey, what are you trying to do? There's always white space somewhere on the calendar. And we have a really bad habit in the Army of, hey, we gotta fill this with something, right? You have that opportunity. Instead of being like, well, you know, DTMS is showing like, hey, we are really crappy on our qualifications. Like, I'm going to schedule, you know, range week here and do this, right? Sometimes it's better to just to take that pause. Hey, what do you guys want to do here? And then get that fill in there. And then it makes it a little bit easier to that. You also want to make an environment where your company commanders aren't afraid to come into your office to talk to you.
100%. And your first sergeants.
100%.
If those command teams don't feel comfortable just walking into the three shop to shoot what's up and how's everything going, like, you're failing, in my opinion.
I would just add to that, Charlie, that not only should they be able to walk into your office and have the conversation with you about, hey, I want to talk work, but making yourself available to them, talk about other things that are also important to them. I know for me, I tried to build relationships with the company commanders where, hey, if you need to talk about career advice, or you want to come in and talk about your career track, or you're thinking about something different that, you know, isn't the golden path to get you to become a general officer, but it's something that's personally important to you or professionally that you want to go do, come have a conversation with me. I started off my career in the Army in 3rd ID, and I had a Squadron XO and a Squadron S3 who were absolutely terrifying individuals. Every lieutenant inside of the squadron was afraid to run into these two, what we consider to be angry bald men. And as a angry bald man myself, I intentionally tried to not have that personality. I mean, to be open and accessible, especially to the company commanders. I lost out because that XO and that field grade both went on to be very successful tactical battalion commanders. One of them commanded an ABCT. They ended up being great mentors for people, but none of us wanted that because they really weren't accessible at that point in their career because they were fitting a caricature of the Iron Major. They were the squadron commander's hatchet men. And they really weren't that way. It was just, we were in Iraq. It was a personification of like what we had to do in a combat zone. I would recommend never, ever fit a role and take a characteristic that isn't your actual personality as a field grade officer. Just be your authentic self, who you are, and then be approachable to your people.
And sometimes, as we talked earlier, in their mentorship, that's not something that they see. So you being able to sit down and have a conversation about that, regardless of what path they ended up choosing, but to be able to provide that experience is one of the things that they probably most need when they come into your office.
So speaking of relationship with the company, obviously HHC and your forward support company are a little bit different. You all being combat arms officers, talk about the relationship with those two companies.
I'll start with the HHC because I think that's the one that a lot of people struggle with the most, especially on staff. As an S3, it's fairly straightforward, but as an XO, you really have to manage that relationship where your staff officers, they see the XO as their boss, they see the battalion commander as their commander, but you still have to manage that relationship with HHC. I think one of the most important things you can do is sit down early on in your tenure as the XO with the HHC command team and clearly outline what your expectations are and develop that working relationship. I always told the first sergeant whenever we got a new first sergeant in is, hey, if you ever get pushed back from the staff, your first stop is me. And I would tell all of my new staff officers that when first sergeant tells you to do something, you do it. It's not, oh, I don't have to. It's not, oh, I'm busy. If the first sergeant or the company commander is telling you they need you to knock out an admin requirement, it's not an option. You're coming back. You're doing it. But then you also have to set that expectation. The company's doing a PT test, XO, you're out there. And then when your insert staff shop OIC isn't there because they don't think that it's important to them, you not only you're demonstrating that, but you're that reinforcing fire. One of the things I always tried to do to help my first sergeant too was had my S1 establish a IPSA approval chain for my staff that came through me. So that way when S1, just I'll pick on him, you know, S1 does his leave request. If they don't see that it's come through the XO already, they kick it back. And then they call me and I go down. I'm like, what are you doing, man? Like, you got to push this stuff through me. The FSC, I think it's a little bit different. Whereas you are, at least in the CAB, or the combat arms formation, be it CAV squadron, infantry battalion, whatever. You're that formation that the FSC really wants to help and support, but then at the major level, you're helping the FSC to manage their relationship with their parent unit. That's that conversation among majors, right? You got to go back to the BSBXO and say, hey, I'm getting this from my FSC. Grizzly 6 is telling me this. What's the deal, man? And then you can kind of have that negotiation at the major level and then take something back. But what you absolutely can't do is have that antagonistic relationship between the two. Your FSC commander comes up and says, hey, BSB is telling me I got to do this. And you can't just be like, no, absolutely not. You're not doing that. I don't care what they say. You have to manage that relationship very well.
And it's not just managing the relationship. You have to build that relationship absolutely with the BSB. Logisticians see the world in an entirely different light than combat arms do. And they have their requirements and their metrics and the things that keep them awake at night that are different, overlap generally with what combat arms guys think about. But overall, there is a different mindset there. And one of the things I think that I did that was very helpful for me as an XO was I had a great relationship with the SPO. I had a great relationship with the BSB XO. I built a relationship with the BSB battalion commander.
Yep.
And going out of my way to get to know that individual paid huge dividends for me, because it was a situation where I never had to circumvent his XO or try to go around the SPO or do anything like that. But at the end of the day, he would hear, hey, X battalion is trying to do this. There's, you know, a conflict with what we've tasked the FSC to do and what they're trying to do. And he'd turn around and be like, I know Ron. I know what he's trying to do. He's not trying to game the FSC or screw anybody over. XO, go talk to him, just see what it is, and then see if we can support it. And that personal relationship that I was able to cultivate with the commander of that organization was huge for me for like 2 years.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing you talk about. Combat arms guys working in, or girls working in maneuver units, you know, they have a vision on how the relationships work in those organizations. And you think, hey, well, the brigade S4 will put something in the order, and that's how it's going to be. Where if you actually understand how the support battalion works, it's really the SPO managing those things. Building those relationships between the XO, the S3, the SPO, and the support battalion can pay huge dividends throughout. And it's just something you don't see in the line and block charts and the normal organization understanding, and certainly can be lost if you spent your entire time as a platoon leader or a company commander in a line unit and you weren't really having to deal with those things. But once you jump into that XOS3 job, if you don't figure that out pretty quick, you're going to be struggling. One of the things that you mentioned there in terms of those informal relationships kind of informing you about your job, let's talk about the Ops Sergeant Major. How did he help you in your different positions in terms of understanding things that were being put out that you thought were very clear, but maybe companies didn't understand the same way through his feedback with first sergeants?
Ron?
Oh, I was going to let y'all go because I have all kinds of weird stories about Ops Sergeant Majors.
You're the only one that had an Ops Sergeant Major.
Yeah. So Staff Sergeant, Ops Sergeant Major Dempsey was a phenomenal human being. Still is. He's a great leader in the Army. I was very lucky as a 3 compared to the other two gentlemen sitting here, because I actually got a Sergeant Major from the Sergeant Major Academy at one point. I looked at my Sergeant Major, and the first day he showed up, pulled him in, mispronounced his last name, and then was immediately corrected and built a personal relationship from that point. Again, personal relationships, in my opinion, are one of the most important and powerful things that you can build as a field grade officer. There's so much work that you'll never be able to do all by yourself or be able to strong arm people to do around you. Brad and I, because I'll just use his first name, ended up being very closely aligned in how we saw operations for the battalion. We generally thought along the same lines as how we should execute stuff. He was a very no fluff kind of individual when it came to stuff. I would come to him with plans and he'd be like, hey, sir, cut this out. That's dumb. And I used him as a sounding board and a refining agent for how I thought we should do operations. And I did that before I would take things to the battalion commander. Personally, him and I we're actually still very close friends. We ended up being neighbors and he lived down the street from me. There were also conversations where I'd be like walking the dogs and I'd see him in the front yard and I'm like, hey, I just got an email or a text message from the boss. What do you think about this? Leverage them, use them, and be thankful if you actually have an Ops Sergeant Major, because most of the time that I've seen that role has been filled by a Sergeant First Class. At best, if you're very lucky, you'll have a former First Sergeant who may be filling that role, which, Joe, you had that opportunity for a while.
Yeah, as a 3, I think I went through 5 distinct individuals that were filling the Ops Sergeant Major role. We had a Ops Sergeant Major who, due to some surgery and PCS timeline was on the books, had him on and off for a few months. I had Staff Sergeant who was absolutely fantastic, was a solve the problem, get it done kind of guy. But, you know, at the end of the day, nothing against him from a training standpoint. He's a Staff Sergeant. So we had to do a lot of coaching, teaching, mentoring. But at that point, you're using that individual as a Ops NCO and less as an Ops Sergeant Major. And there really is a distinction there. The management of tasks, the tracking of tasks, vice the more Sergeant Major role of, you know, that senior enlisted advisor, that, you know, bringing recommendations to the table. Not to say that Sergeant Dempsey didn't bring great recommendations to the table, but we were using him more in a role of management. We spent a little bit more time kind of teaching and using that opportunity to groom him. So getting him integrated into things like planning processes. Hey, here's the MDMP handbook. Here's how we do training management, getting them outside of that company view and really looking into that. But again, NCOs that are not formally trained. So there is that learning aspect to it.
I would like to focus on two things. You know, where do you want to place your energy? And your op sergeant major is a good place as a battalion three to put a good bit of your energy to develop that individual. Probably their first time being at that battalion level staff. So, you know, as a new three, spend that energy there and kind of shape that relationship to how you want it. We like to think that the op sergeant major and the S3, that's the battle buddy equation. And then you go to the field and you realize your op sergeant major lives with the XO. And when you're back in garrison, yes, he works next to you, but really he kind of picks up whatever CSM, you know, has him or her do. You kind of get into this big five, everybody's got an interconnecting relationship and it's not just a one pair, hey, this is my guy, don't touch him type thing. So it's definitely a whole entity process to kind of build that op sergeant major role. The second thing that I would like to offer is as you kind of build that relationship, we like to think, hey, this is the op sergeant major's lane, this is the S3's lane, this is CSM's lane, this is the XO's lane. It's not clear cut like that. So as you kind of go through and you're building those relationships to work, what I would tell my NCOs that were filling the op sergeant major role, you're me. We're the same coin. There is no NCO officer business. There's just leadership business. And it's imperative that whatever I know is going on in the brigade and in the battalion at the company levels, and whatever you know going on all those levels, they're the same for either of us. So that if I'm ever out of the office or I'm over here taking care of something, you already know what I know from our last touch point, and you can now effectively engage on that. And you will have my support when you make a decision and I'm not in the room. And, you know, we can talk about it afterwards. And like, maybe if it was the wrong decision, we'll figure out how to get it back on track. But like, that's the empowerment that you need to give to your op sergeant major to have that freedom. And it's not just, hey, I do the task tracker and the troops to task list and make sure the talk gets set up. Like, he's got a much bigger role in the battalion than those things, right? Definitely build that relationship and definitely, I would say, spend some energy and getting that role fulfilled, because when you don't have somebody in that op sergeant major role, that'll be a hindrance to you. As people kind of come and go, I said it earlier on in the S3 role, it's kind of a revolving door in that shop. You definitely, that's like the place where, as you build the system, spend that time there because it'll pay dividends.
So to pull on kind of a thread you also mentioned, Charlie, is utilizing that op sergeant major in the planning role and not just having him or her be a part of the planning, but leveraging that individual and their experience to pull in your NCOICs out of your individual staff section shops. This is something I did a terrible job at, and I felt like I got a little bit better towards the end as an XO, but I did, and as a three, I did a horrendously terrible job at this. I did not leverage the experience of the NCOs that I had inside the individual sections. The S1 NCOIC was just the S1 NCOIC. And, you know, she did a specific job. And when it came to like MDMP time, she wasn't there. Same for the S6 NCOIC and the S4 NCOIC. They were doing maintenance or doing flipples, or there was always a reason for them not to be there. And we did MDMP. And as a learning organization and a learning staff, if I could go back and do it again, I would absolutely pull those NCOs in, because they have vastly different experiences and would have absolutely increased the capability of the organization if I had to use that. And pulling the op sergeant major in to help you be that tool to pull those sometimes senior NCOs, sometimes, you know, staff sergeants filling a role that is above their pay grade, having that individual help pull them along in that process would be hugely beneficial.
Absolutely. I think the other thing too is using your op sergeant major to reframe the role of the NCO on staff in the sense that, you know, let's talk about the NCOs of the three shop. Most of them, if you're in the armor community, you're in an ABCT, you've got one or two staff sergeants, maybe sergeants first class in the three shop that are master gunners. Those soldiers, those NCOs, except that you know, they're going to be on staff and they're motivated to do a good job. Writ large, the other NCOs in the shop probably feel they're there because they're being punished. Highly unlikely that they are, but they're there. They don't want to be there. But using your sergeant major, your op sergeant major, to not only get the right NCOs into the three shop that have that ability to support planning, but also to coach and mentor them that it being in the three shop is actually career and professionally enhancing. Doing that good work in the three shop and understanding how the battalion thinks and plans helps Sergeant First Class Perez when he goes back to the line, because now not only does he understand the platoon's role in the battalion, but he also understands the battalion's role and what the battalion's thinking and how the interplay between the various units within the battalion is affecting the outcome of the mission. And that also doesn't go just for the NCOs either. Charlie, you mentioned how many lieutenants you got in the three shop. That three shop is oftentimes a recent bullet graduate's excellent opportunity for op sergeant majors and as well to pull in that young lieutenant and let's talk about how are you going to utilize your NCO? How are you going to counsel them? Well, how will I know if I have an NCO that's not doing their job? And that's a great opportunity to start shaping that and informing your young officers of the capabilities and expectations of the non-commissioned officer that they're about to be working with.
We mentioned the big five, the battalion commander, XO, S3, command sergeant major, op sergeant major. Do any of you have any stories about where that relationship worked really well and it benefited you, or a story that you want to share with the audience about where it was dysfunctional for a little bit and then you figured out a way to kind of get over that challenge?
Yeah, I'll definitely start off on this one. When I went out, I had an initial run-in with one of my CSMs in this relationship where we didn't get off onto the right foot. As the XO, you know, the chief of staff, you own the staff, right? And the CSM said, hey, S1's mine. Really, what it just took was sitting down and saying, okay, let's put both of our prides aside and kind of figure out, how do we really want this relationship to work? Yes, you absolutely have a tremendous role and you are the CSM, right? And you get to lay out your expectations, but that doesn't say anything that you get to steamroll me and my plans. Like, we have to sync this together. Through a couple hard conversations, which I wish I had had earlier on, which would have avoided this whole problem, would have set a much better relationship off the get-go. I offer that is we think, you know, if you follow the line wire diagram of who works for who and how things really go, but in practice, it's not really that way. The second thing is, and you know, I kind of mentioned this before, you know, the big five, like everybody kind of bleeds into another sphere and responsibility that we each hold. So the battalion commander can say, hey, you know, XO, S3, this is where you guys own it. XO, you own the staff, but three, everything's in operation, right? So then now, who's really getting the tail pinned on them for who's responsible? What people don't really realize is how the battalion and brigade headquarters are usually set up. So you get a wing where usually the battalion commander, the XO, and the CSM live. All the good ideas kind of flow and all the guidance gets kind of like brought out of there. And then off at the complete opposite end, wing, floor, whatever, you have the S3 and the op sergeant major kind of living and working and grinding. You got to have more than just the daily meeting touch points with these people. So as many times as you can to go over and just pop in and see, hey, what's going on? What's the flavor? So those are kind of the things that I would say.
I would add, so if you find yourself in an environment where, and actually really every environment's this way, everybody has different personalities. Nobody in a battalion top five or any organization is going to sync up and see things eye to eye, ideologically the same. That's just not how the nature of the Army works, because we are a people organization. We are all typically, especially in the combat arms realm, very proud people. We have put ourselves into a profession where being the best is kind of ingrained into us at like the base level. It is important for us. And being wrong is something that is catastrophically unacceptable for most of us, at least in our minds. And so for me, I would add on to is being able to be humble enough to swallow your pride. One, to be wrong, or two, to just agree with somebody that their position is different than yours and you may not agree with it for the sake of the organization and the team. That's the course of action you're going to execute. And obviously the commander holds command discretion. The commander gets to have the final arbitration and say, and you know, usually his or her opinion is what is going to be the decision. Inside of the rest of the top five with the battalion CSM and the Ops Sergeant Major, the three and the XO and that relationship, sometimes you just got to sit down and you got to hash things out. I went and I had to have a couple conversations with my battalion CSM as an XO where I was like, hey, you just directed and ordered my staff officer to do this. That is in direct conflict with the guidance that I've given them. We had a couple heated words with one another and then we agreed to disagree. And then at that point I looked at him and I was like, we're going to do it your way. That's not what I want to do, but I think that what you are trying to do is getting to the same end state that I want. Sometimes even between field grades, you're going to have disagreements. A personal story. I don't even remember what we were arguing about, Joe.
I don't either.
We were in Germany and we were doing something and it may have been Easter egg hunt. I don't know.
Well, I think it might have been.
We had to find a large amount of unaccounted for brass across Grafenwehr training area. And how we thought to go about doing this operation on Easter Sunday came across with multiple different courses of action. And we had not pitched them to the commander yet. And one of them I found to be absolutely unacceptable and unfeasible. And Joe thought that was the way we should do it. And him and I ended up having a louder than I would have probably liked to have conversation in an open forum. And I remember about 5 minutes into him, I'm like, wow, we're yelling at each other in front of 90% of the staff. And I'm like, this is mommy and daddy fighting. Mm-hmm. I stopped and I literally just walked away and I swallowed my pride. And I think I walked out like 5 minutes later and was like, okay, Joe, we're going to do it your way.
We found the brass.
Yeah, because we collected stuff from like World War II. At the end of the day, like it was a situation where personalities conflict. The organization has to be successful, whether or not your pride gets in the way of that.
Absolutely. I think this is it's also a great opportunity to talk about self-awareness. You absolutely can't do this job if you don't understand what your own triggers are. So understanding what's going to get you fired up. If you watch the top five, the members of your top five, you can see what people start to do when they get agitated. You can see what they start to do when they get frustrated. And understanding when you're having an argument or a disagreement that's going to come to a less than ideal solution, just really because out of bullheadedness. If CSM's over there and he's getting twitchy and you can tell they're starting to get agitated, it's probably a good time to just, hey, let's reconvene on this. You know, let's go talk about it. Let's go grab a cup of coffee. Let's change the scenery. Let's de-escalate a little bit and re-engage, because eventually people are just going to start being unproductive on that.
All right, well, we've talked a little bit about the staff, our relationships amongst both internal and external organizations. I think we're going to kind of transition here, and we're going to really focus on tactical operations. Having been on several deployments, CTC rotations, and two of you currently working at the Mission Command Training Program, one of you working at CALL. I think this is a great chance for us to start talking about staff processes and how those field grades are going to lead those processes. Looking back, running estimates. How are you using running estimates to inform the commander about what's going on in the fight, whether the plan's progressing correctly? Are you getting to those objectives that you need to? Talk a little bit about either what you learned at the time or what you can look at backwards and say, this is how I should do these things more effectively in order to inform the commander about the things that we need to do to be successful.
So I would start off with proposing that when you sit down in the chair in a new job, you need to pull out the SOP at whatever organization and level you are working at and actually read that document and then change it or recommend changing it to whoever the appropriate authority is. A lot of times we will hand wave SOPs and say we have them so that we can get a checkbox before we go to the National Training Center and we say we had it. And then if you go back and read that document, it's not aligned with the systems and processes that you actually are utilizing in your organization. And so I say that because we had an SOP at the battalion when I was an S3, and it distinctly talked about staff running estimates, and it did not align with how we actually conducted those estimates inside the battalion. And it created confusion because you get the one high speed lieutenant who'd show up, find an SOP on the share drive, read it, and then be very confused when we went to, you know, conduct a FTX, and it's like, well, this isn't what the SOP said. So read the SOP, understand what's in it, and then actually change it to support the process that needs to be in place for the organization. I say that having failed to do that as a battalion S3, got better at it as a battalion XO, but as an OCT for MCTP, I've seen from the theater army level down all the way to the division where staff struggle in order to manage the processes, either because they don't understand the process, or they haven't read the SOP, or they don't have an SOP. And those things will set the foundation for how you can actually conduct those level of operations.
I think you guys being at MCTP, you definitely see that if you have a good SOP, it makes everything more efficient. It makes everything easier and faster. And when we get in those time constrained environments, without an SOP, it's almost impossible to do any sort of staff estimates or planning in a short environment.
Yeah, and I think there's a second flavor to that. It's not just understanding the SOP, but it's understanding how your boss receives the information. Whether working on a division staff, corps staff, brigade staff, or the battalion staff, you have to understand how the boss is going to make decisions and how he needs to receive that information in order to make those decisions. Or whoever the audience is, based on the decision maker, because as you kind of go up in echelons, there's going to be different roles of who can actually make what decisions off that authority matrix. Yes, understand the SOP, understand how your boss needs to get his information and what his products are, and then focus those changes in the SOP to meet that. Because what you're going to find is, hey, my boss really likes a fight card, and that's what lives in his book in the tactical realm. And that's what we need to build our running estimates to constantly update so that when I print it off three times a day and stick it in his book, he has the latest and greatest information. And it's not a wasted effort by the staff producing products and getting information that isn't necessarily required for the fight at hand. So once you can kind of discern what is actually needed, then you can go back and kind of refine that SOP to kind of make that happen. And that's going to be the hardest challenge, is understanding how does your boss receive information. You know, is having two different commanders, one was absolutely needed to have everything pristine on the PowerPoint and the product given to him because he couldn't get past that you used Times New Roman instead of Arial on the slide deck versus another boss who was like, just give me the information. As long as I have it, I can visualize the fight that way. That'll drive the efficiency in the staff as you build the products going forward, so that now you don't kind of burn the staff out.
You jogged my thought process a little bit with that, Charlie. Define what your staff running estimate actually is as a product. A lot of times, because of how we teach young officers in our military, most of us think of a staff running estimate as a quad chart. It's a piece of paper, and I write some facts, assumptions, I write some light constraints, and I throw stuff at it. And there's, you know, there's goodness in that at the individual level for probably the staff officer trying to produce it. But ultimately, like, what is the commander using as a staff running estimate is really the what we refer to as his warfighting products. So what is that commanding general, all the way down to a battalion commander, sticking in his notebook, and he's walking into a meeting and he's looking at this, you know, information that's important to him that he's ultimately going to use in order to make decisions for the organization based on the plan and the MDMP process. Most of the time, young company grade officers have no concept that that's really what a staff running estimate is. They're just building a single slide PowerPoint with a quad chart on it. And it's not really what it needs to be.
and we've talked right now up to this point about supporting the commander, but when you're the XONS3, you're also supporting the staff and the understanding of the staff. So are there additional tools that you found to be the most critical in a combined arms battalion, a maneuver unit, to help the staff understand what's going on so that they can figure out what's important to the commander?
I would say the most important thing is stay up longer than any of them do and work harder than all of them do, because I'm just kidding. No, realistically, training individuals on how to use the tools and the systems that provide you the data that you need is probably the best thing that I was capable of doing. So when I took over as the XO, you'll hear a recurring theme, because all armor formations go through this, but maintenance is a significant challenge. We had a group of young officers who were capable of doing their job as company XOs, but they were not proficient in understanding the logistics systems that drove the maintenance process. And so, you know, I had to become very good at reading an ESR. And in such, I trained them to becoming very good at reading an ESR. But I also had to teach them, where does this come from? So like G Army drives a lot of the things now. Some of us that are older remember PBOOS and some other systems. But ultimately, there are a myriad of data sets that are out there. And the Army's, you know, trying to consolidate all this into like a single pane of glass type concept. But where do you go, and how do you utilize that system to pull the data that you need at your level? You've never been trained to do that as a company level officer, because you're probably an infantry or an armor officer in a combined arms battalion, or insert whatever formation you may be in. You know, they didn't teach you as a cadet to get on, you know, G Army and look up where the shipping data label for enhanced fire control unit is inside of the entire logistics systems in the United States Army. But that's the most important thing you need, because that tank isn't going to ever shoot until you put it in there, and the battalion commanders, you know, crushing somebody on why this thing doesn't work. I use logistics and maintenance as an example, because I focused heavily on that. But another perfect example is for the S1. Like, if they are not capable and proficient in using IPSE, they'll never be able to do their job. Now, they get a lot of training for that now. But when I was an XO, IPSE was force-wide rollout. So I had an S1 who didn't know how to use IPSE. Joe, Philippi, and I had to both become much smarter together on a process and a system that, you know, we didn't know. The tools are there. Some of them you end up developing yourself, whether you're going to build stuff in Excel spreadsheets. If you're computer science smart and you can do those things and code and program, like, good on you. But the Army will provide you the tools. A lot of it's just going out and finding where they are and what makes them useful.
Yeah. Well, I think too, so not only finding the products and finding the tools and how to do it, but in a tactical lens, Jeremy, is you have to train the staff to communicate using a common language. And one of the things that we find is, you know, the S1 is saying, oh, sir, we're at 85% on 19 kilo 10s and we're at 60% on 19 kilo 20s. I had a battalion commander that could do that math in his head. Drove me nuts. Most of us can't. How is that being translated? What is 80% 19 kilo 10s translate to in a tactical setting? What that translates to is 28 of 32 M1s, combat effective, based on manning. Then you talk to the S4 and the BMO, and they say, hey, sir, we're at 85% on our M113 fleet. Okay, well, what does that equate to, right? So if we train the staff to talk in a common language, effectively translated into something that is easily absorbed by the rest of the room, that's where you get that synergy. If the S2 is talking about, hey, we've got three enemy companies, everybody in the room can roughly make that equivalency, especially if we've trained the staff well, that they understand the enemy threat. Then when you say we've got three companies, that combat power immediately translates to something that is consumable to the three shop. It's consumable to the FSO. It's consumable to the S4 for ammo planning if you're in the defense. Same thing with the S6. You start talking about, you know, how ferrous is the sand in the northern part of the training area at Fort Bliss. Like, cool story, man. Just tell me our FM radios are 85% effective. You know, something right. that's consumable to the rest of the staff.
It's definitely talking the same language, right? And that's a hard thing to do when you look across the staff and you look at the different personnel and their backgrounds and what they're the SME on. But I would say it's taking that common language and applying the analytics to it. So getting that junior staff to make the jump of, yes, I only have 50% fuel, on hand right now. So I'm black, if you will, on fuel. Well, you're not black on fuel. Like, yes, you're due for a resupply, but I still have 8 hours of continuous operations in the tank because that's what that means. And then you can say, okay, what was the mission? Well, the mission's supposed to be done in 3 hours and I only have 5 clicks to move to get it done. Hey, I just need to make sure I'm planning that resupply at the back end of that when we culminate so that I can continue operations. And if you can get that staff to then talk about the so what rather than just the data in a running estimate, then you're in the right mark. They struggle with understanding the common operating picture across the board in that. It's not just, hey, post a running estimate on the wall, right, and know where your forces are. It's, hey, these products that we need to get to the boss, this should be up on the board so that no matter who walks into that talk can understand the fight at a glance without anybody having to brief them. So if you looked up there and you said, okay, I have my maneuver graphics, I have my fires overlay, I have my enemy sit temp overlay. Now, at a glance, I know my combat power, who's combat effective, who's not. I know when the next resupply is coming in. Like, if I have those kinds of information, now it doesn't matter if the CXO is sitting at the talk, the battalion commander coming in, or just somebody coming in off a shift, they can quickly absorb that information because the analytics have already been done on it and they can know where they're at in time and space so that if they have to make a decision, it can be made there on the spot. That's where you're going to see success.
There's so much data involved. And we've talked about how, you know, you can't do it all, no matter how smart you are or how capable you are. You know, how do you, as a field grade, start instilling in your young learning staff and your company grade officers, some of who don't want to be in your shop because they want to be platoon leaders? How do you instill in them, I don't need just your data. I don't need you to just give me numbers. I need you to analyze this and I need you to give me knowledge. I need you to get it to the point where I can give this product and it's a refined assessment to the decision maker in the organization. Because ultimately, what are the products that any of the staff is building for a commander? All of it drives decision points. If your data in, especially if it's garbage data in, you're not going to get good decisions or the commander will be delayed in making those decisions.
As we start to wrap this up, could each one of you give me one of the biggest lessons you learned about leading the staff?
Staff, it's an interesting beast, right? Everybody's got a different background. Everybody's got a different specialty. Leading the staff, you have to figure out how to get a common goal centered around it and bring everybody together to kind of work. And Garrison, a lot, and even in the tactical realm, everybody kind of lives at a different place. And Ron, you kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier, and Joe, I know you definitely know this. You know, I'm not an S1. I'm not a techie guy in the S6 realm. Yes, I did some logistics as a battalion S4 way long ago. But you got to get down and know what it is your guys and gals do in that environment. And you got to understand the problems that they face. And you got to be able to find the solutions or the person that has the solution for them and kind of make the two touch up and understand so that, you know, you can get effectiveness out of them. That's like the biggest part of leading the staff is not only setting the common goal, but understanding what each of them are doing. You know, you don't go into the fallacy of you figure out who your 3 or 4 pipe hitters are and they end up doing all the work and everybody else is just sitting on the side, twiddling their thumbs, being like, well, I don't know what's going on. So if you can get that all in there and kind of, you know, figure out how maybe it's a turn-based system of where the NCO kind of leads the planning effort or everybody gets a turn about being in front of the man, you'll build a much better effective staff that is motivated together and takes on problems together rather than separated smaller entity problems that don't necessarily come together to form a good plan at the end of the day.
I like that. The first is, you know, the common goal, right? You have to create a common goal among the staff, you know, but creating common goals in the short and the long run. Hey, we're going to get through this exercise and this is what we as a staff want to achieve. And then also in the next 6 months, this is where I want to achieve what we want to achieve as a staff. So knowing your individual leaders, knowing their staff sections, support their learning in a professional sense, right? Understand what your staff sections are doing. Like Charlie mentioned, you know, you have a working understanding of IPSA, have a working understanding of G Army, know what your S6 is talking about when he's talking about whatever that new widget is. You don't have to know the details of it, but at least understand enough to contextualize their issues, their problems, and their successes so that you can magnify those as appropriate. But the other part of this is, you know, get them the professional mentorship that they need. You know, I always told my staff, like, I don't understand your job nearly as well as you're going to. I don't understand this system as well as you do. But I'm the one that can go to the Brigade S6 separate from an S6 to S6 relationship. And I can say, hey, brother, I need you to spend some time with my captain down here. He's doing really great work, but we need some help with this. Because that Brigade S6 might not see that. But also you can leverage their professional knowledge to expand the professional knowledge of your individual leaders and their shop. Same thing with S1, same thing with that, you know, especially S4.
I would offer that just make sure you sit down with your people, understand what they want to do professionally and personally. Like, what are their goals? You have to take a group of people who either had different expectations or they're in a transition period, especially, you know, as you're starting to pin captain, and figure out what do they want to do? Not just in the Army, but like, what do they want to do for themselves? And I say that, so I remember young cadet and second Lieutenant Rice joining the Army because I wanted to go to Iraq. I remember the invasion in 03. I was in high school. I had a contract before I was 18 to join the Marine Corps, and I needed my dad to sign it, and he ripped it up. He laughed at me and told me I was going to go to college. And I was like, Dad, I'm going to miss my generation's war. And he again laughed at me and said, war's going nowhere, son. You'll be fine. He's like, you can figure that out after you go to college. He sent me to college, and I went and did that, and I ended up joining ROTC, and lo and behold, I went to Iraq 6 years later, and my father conveniently was more right than I like to admit that he was when he gives me life advice. I joined the Army because I wanted to deploy, and I wanted to go to combat, and as a young captain, I definitely remember sitting on a range during a gunnery and was like, this is not what I joined for, and I'm not having fun in the alignment of what I wanted to do in my career. And I had a mentor who sat me down and was like, well, what do you want? If you're going to stay in, what do you want to do? And that was a profoundly impactful moment for me. I realized that I liked coaching and I liked teaching and I liked mentoring young leaders. Several individuals that, you know, are now majors and they're very successful. And I've told them for a long time, if you can do the job that I'm doing now, if I can teach you to do my job and do it better for me, it's better for soldiers. That's the rewarding part for me in my career. And that's my driving motivation personally and professionally for why I do this. We all joke about, you know, suffering, shared suffering on the staff. And it is a true statement. But if you can minimize the shared suffering and make a place enjoyable to show up to work, you will get better outputs from the individuals who are working for you, and the organization will be more successful. If you can make it a place where what I'm doing today is going to help me do what I want to do long term, that's good. And maybe they don't know what they want to do long term, so then be involved and coach and mentor them. And I think that's a critical part of being a major inside of a battalion or a brigade, trying to help people figure it out, because we're all young at that point. We're in a transitionary period in our lives, and some people just don't know what they want to do, and maybe you can help provide them that. But the range of what people will ask for and what they want to do can vary from I have an emergent problem right now, please help me, all the way up to like, I have significant life goals I want to do, can you help me like set the stones to get there? So that would be what I would offer as lesson learned from me.
All right, gentlemen, thanks for sharing your insights and your time today. Appreciate learning about some of your experiences as battalion XOs and S3s. Is there anything else you want to share with the audience as just a final closing comment?
So I know a common theme, we talk about suffering and Iron Majors and the grind. I would also argue, like, this is my last few years down at the battalion level were some of the most awesome points in my military career. And, you know, I'm over the 20-year mark. When you take a step back, it's very impactful, not only to yourself, but to so many people that you are able to touch and influence. You get into it and you, yeah, there are parts that are going to be hard, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not great. It is a wonderful, great opportunity. And you know, I've been very blessed. You know, the relationships that I met all the way from battalion commanders and brigade commanders down, junior officers and you know, junior soldiers, if you just keep that positive attitude going into it, it is a really enjoyable, awesome experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Charlie's right. You know, this is that line from CGSC, right? You're organizational leaders now. The fun now is not in getting to do the cool stuff. Like you're going to go down range. You might shoot at table six. You might not. But seek the enjoyment in the organization's success and, you know, get that fulfillment from watching the whole succeed. You know, that some of the best times of my XOS3 was coming out of operations that we thought were going to be terrible. Maybe they were rough, but watching the battalion succeed and get through it and come out better than it was that was the fulfilling part. And you really have to seek those opportunities while you're doing it.
I guess the last thing I would add is embrace situations where you think things are not going to be either what you want or they're going to be difficult. I know for me personally, like being an S3 is what I liked doing. Operations are comfortable for me. That's what Combat Arms World revolves around. I went to graduate school. I focused a lot on operations and business. And so being an S3 was very comfortable for me. And when my boss was like, hey, Ron, you're going to be the XO. And I was like, cool, when's that happening? And he's like, well, tomorrow, because the XO is going to be the Brigade XO. And I'm like, oh, I got both roles. I was not excited or really looking forward to the next year as being the Battalion XO. And I can tell you that I loved being an S3. Professionally and personally, being an XO was probably one of the most rewarding jobs I've ever done in the Army. And it wasn't what I was looking forward to. And just embrace difficult challenges, because sometimes you will grow and learn from those things in ways that you never could have anticipated before you stepped into that role.
Great. Today we discussed lessons learned by Battalion XOs and S3s. You can find call products such as First 100 Days XO S3, Home Station Training, and Running Estimates for more insights on topics discussed. Plus our entire catalog of print and digital publication available for download on our CAC-enabled site. There you can request print products shipped to you. Be sure to like and subscribe to our podcast and follow us on social media. You can see all resources available at www.army.mil/call. Call CTC bulletins and post-exercise reports offer lessons learned from recent unit operations in a variety of environments. If you have trouble finding information on our website, use the Request for Information tab and receive direct feedback from an analyst at call. Finally, if you have a best practice to submit, or a capability gap that requires a .mil PF solution, submit observations directly to call using the Quickfire portal on our website. I would like to thank all of our call team members and our producer, Ms. Paige Cox. Thank you for listening to Call's podcast, Insights from the Fight. We are dedicated to providing you with the insights you need to lead, train, and fight today and in the future. Join us next time for another discussion on lessons learned from the force.